Yes, indeed. Welcome back to Coast with the skeptical psychic back with us. We're going to be talking about psychokinesis and miracle healing and all these great things, and you're part of it on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Nancy Duterte with us. The skeptical psychic is an attorney specializing in securities litigation, also well known and trained as a psychic detective, spiritual medium, remote viewer. She works with law enforcement and victims' families to help find missing persons, as well as doing private readings for an international clientele. Nancy's also certified for more than 20 years as an intuitive Gestalt psychotherapy and teaches her own different brand of remote viewing, or what we call psychic spying. Her latest book, How to Talk to an Alien. Nancy, welcome back. I'm looking forward to this tonight.
Thank you, George. I appreciate that. One minor correction, there's intuitive gestalt psychotherapy.
Okay. And are you hunkered down these days? Where are you?
I am hunkered down in the epicenter of the United States. So I live about a half hour outside New York City. So I'm in New Jersey, the most densely populated state in the country. And we're getting hit really, really hard. So I've been hunkered down for about 7 weeks.
Any decision on when they think they're going to open up out that way?
I don't think they're really talking about it because, you know, I was just looking at to see if that line was flattening anywhere. And they say it looks like it's flattening a little bit, you know, off of about 800 deaths a day in New York City. But in New Jersey, it looks to me it's spiking. It's like a bed of nails.
And what they don't say, though, Nancy, is how many people normally die in New York every day, how many die from the flu. They should mention those things, I think, to put things in perspective for people.
I totally get it, and I've heard that a lot from people who don't live in the epicenter. But I can tell you my daughter's boyfriend is a he's a volunteer med student at one of New York City's public hospitals. So I've been listening to him tell me you cannot believe the horror stories and the ambulances that are continuously lined up. And believe me, I've seen all of the other, there's some propaganda that's floating around like, oh, you know, look, the emergency rooms are empty and all of that. And it just isn't true.
No, depends on where you are. Some places are empty, some places are packed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's totally the way this thing works. This is one of the weirdest illnesses that I've ever seen. And I don't know whether, you know, you've talked about it with your other guests, but there are Nobel Prize French physicians and medical scientists who are now coming out and confirming a report that came out. It was research that was done by Indians in India, researchers there, I think it was around the end of December. And they showed that this particular virus has got four artificial, I think they call them insertions into the...
Oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah. So this is actually, it's a combination of the AIDS virus and coronavirus. The coronavirus, they think, at least the French researchers are saying, that the coronavirus, the Chinese were trying to use it as a carrier to get the vaccine for AIDS to all of the locations in the immune system. And this whole thing is just completely backfired.
Backfired on them. It backfired on all of us because of them.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yep. Absolutely. You had a miraculous healing that I want to get into, possibly from an extraterrestrial or an alien. We'll get into that, but it has a lot to do with psychokinesis. And tell us what that is.
Yeah, I sort of wanted to give, pardon my pun, a backstory on this, because, you know, if people don't know what psychokinesis is, it's really important they understand it in order to understand this particular thing that happened to me. It's a very personal story, and yes, I have, no doubt in my mind that this was an extraterrestrial healing that was given to me. It's a true miracle, and I don't know that I've ever had a miracle like this in my life. But anyway, psychokinesis is, I actually looked it up. They first used the term in 1914, and I started looking up the definitions to see what people, how they define it.
And we call it PK, right?
Yeah, you can call it PK, you can call it telekinesis. And it's one definition is the supposed ability to move objects by mental effort alone, suggesting a skeptical outlook on that ability. Another definition is the movement of physical objects by the mind without use of physical means. I would define it, because I do this stuff, and I've done this stuff now for several years, I would define it a little bit differently. I think it's like an actual, you know, people talked about alchemy as something that goes back to, you know, like the Middle Ages. This is true alchemy, because with using your mind, you're able to cause movement in other objects, or you can interfere in their movements, or you can cause material, the stuff that they're made of, to mutate into something different. So it's an extraordinary ability. There are an awful lot of people who can do it. It was, and I'm sure you know this, there was an aerospace engineer named Jack Hauck. He's passed away now, but he started doing PK parties a long time ago, several decades ago. And he actually was able to, you know, according to his own reports, get 17,000 people to be able to bend spoons with their minds.
Wow. Like Uri Geller.
Like Uri Geller, who, by the way, I went to Uri's house once. I went there, I was there with my family. And I did not want to ask him to bend a spoon, which is everything that he was, you know, very famous for.
Sure.
Because I figured everybody asked him to bend a spoon. So I didn't ask.
Great guy, though. Great guy.
He is a great guy. And but he, at one point, I was talking to him, he said, did you bring a piece of jewelry for me to bend, or a key for me to bend, or a spoon? I said, no. So he said, well, come with me. So we go to his kitchen. He pulls open a drawer. It was full of all kinds of spoons. He pulls out a spoon that was fairly sturdy, and I watched him bend it. And then he bent another one. He has this, I think it's a Lincoln or some kind of car like that. And it's covered with...
Covered with spoons, all bent spoons, right?
Spoons and forks and knives and everything that he's bent. I mean, the whole thing is just, and it's been in museums and stuff. So he takes the kids out there to see that, and he bends another spoon for them. So anyway, and by the way, he wasn't the first person who I ever saw bend a spoon.
No, he was the first person who understood how to market himself. But no, you're right.
Yes, exactly right. And he did that very well. But there was, when I was in college, I was friends with their brother and sister in two different classes. Their mother at the time was probably the world's top UFO channeler. I didn't believe in UFOs. I didn't believe in ETs. I didn't know anything about psychic because I wasn't psychic, as far as I knew. And because she was world famous, her name was Greta Woodrow, and we brought her to come and speak at Princeton, which, by the way, of course, nobody officially at Princeton wanted her to speak, so we brought her in as a under a student program. And she did her speech, and then we took her to lunch, and she said to me, like out of the blue, she said, "Do you want to see me bend a spoon?" And I'm looking at her like, why would I want to see you bend a spoon? And I said, okay. And she took just a spoon, and I watched the thing bend by itself.
You didn't think she'd be using her mind. You thought she was just going to grab two ends and bend it, right?
Yes, I did. And I think it was so weird because first of all, I've never seen that before, and I'm thinking, why? Why would you want to bend a spoon? I mean, and forget about how do you do it, but the whole thing didn't make sense, so I didn't think about it for years. But then what I discovered was there are tons of people who can do this. So my psychic detective teacher, Nancy Orlin Weber, she also bent spoons. All of my various, people who have trained me in different types of remote viewing, Lynn Buchanan in CRV, mm-hmm. Marty Rosenblatt, ARV, Angela Thompson-Smith in ERV, they're all bending spoons.
With their minds.
With their minds. So You got people in the UFO field doing it. You got people in the psychic detective field doing it. And you've got remote viewers doing it.
As you then got interested in this more and more, how did you get involved in the remote viewing aspect and things like that?
That's sort of a longer story because my mentor was Ingo Swann.
Well, you got the best.
I did get the best, and I miss him terribly. But he was one of the most fascinating people who I ever knew because he was incredibly. He was gifted in a whole lot of ways.
Oh my God! Yeah, he was something. Did you know my aunt, who knew him well, Shafika Karegula? She wrote the book called Breakthrough to Creativity.
You know what? That rings a bell to me. I don't think that I knew her, but that's ringing a bell.
She was very close with Ingo, and I'm just wondering if your paths, your cross, you know, paths crossed.
No, most of my time that I spent with Ingo, I just spent with Ingo. So
okay.
I think he compartmentalized a lot.
So as you began to learn all of this, there was some conclusion I think you made personally with yourself just to say this stuff's the real deal, wasn't it?
It took me decades.
That long, really?
Yeah, because believe me, I'm very, very skeptical. I doubt myself more than I doubt anybody else. And in the course of doing all my different types of training, you know, psychic and paranormal and everything that I've, remote viewing and all that stuff, I have questioned myself and doubted myself or, you know, tossed away my data and said, well, you know, I was guessing, it was lucky, it was logical, I mean, whatever. But to the point, and I, after many years of doing this and getting feedback, and by the way, Ingo always said, feedback is a key. Once you get feedback, you start to understand what's real and what's not real.
Right, right. He was right. Didn't you go to Russia to learn more about PK?
Yes, I did. Yeah, that's part of the backstory here. So let me back it up a little bit. For the last few years, I have been working with some physicists, okay, and neuroscientists in doing some work in PK.
Okay.
And I thought, well, you know, I seem to have figured out how to do this, but I do it naturally. And just as an example, sorry to back you up a little bit here, but I did a... Marty Rosenblatt, who teaches the associative remote viewing with his group APP,
right.
And he decided one year, I don't know, a few years ago, I think it was in Las Vegas, and he said, well, let's have a PK party, you know, a la Jack Houck. So he dumps a bunch of cutlery, you know, spoons, forks, knives, and stuff on the coffee table, tells everybody to pick one up. And he said, by the way, I also I went to Home Depot, and I decided, just as for a kick, to pick up a solid steel rod. And it's used for concrete reinforcement. And I bought a couple of them. You try them if you want. And he said, I've determined they are absolutely not bendable. You know, because sometimes people say, well, you know, a piece of silverware, a spoon, yeah, you can, if you push it hard enough, you can get it to bend. So I figured, well, I've done all the other stuff. I've done a lot of that. Let me try the steel rod because I know for sure there's no way I could bend it.
No, it's almost impossible.
No, it is impossible. It is, I'm telling you. So I took it. I held it. Within 10 minutes, all of a sudden it started melting.
Oh.
And I bent the whole thing in half. And when you do something like that and you know it's impossible, but you're doing it and you're holding it, it changes everything. It changes everything about your reality and about what you think you can do with your mind.
I bet.
So anyway,
my gosh.
So with that, and you know, so I'm working on PK, doing some experiments with, you know, some trying to get things to move in vacuum chambers and different temperatures, stuff like that, touching, not touching. And maybe I should explain. You know what? Let me also explain to your listeners, when you're doing PK, you can. There are a number of little things that, you know, little classic tests that you can use. You can put a, like a pinwheel on top of a needle and make it spin.
Make it go around like a compass.
Like a compass. You can also use compasses, which is different because then you're dealing with something, you know, magnetic. You can deal with spirals, paper spirals that are suspended. And, of course, all this goes under glass, so you don't get the, you know, air currents or vibrations, stuff like that. Other type, you can bend metal, of course. You can put stuff on the surface of water and use the water tension to move things. You can do manipulation of photographs. You can do stuff like, you know, martial artists are really good at this. They can start fires with their mind. They can cause you, I don't know if you ever had somebody do that thing where they can push you from, and, you know, they're standing 10 feet away.
Like chi, right?
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah. And I've had a martial artist do that to me. There are all kinds of ways to use PK. Or you could do, I mean, even really what Ingo did when he first went out to SRI, and he caused the Josephson Junction to malfunction, and it was buried underground, very sensitive piece of equipment.
Okay.
Whatever you can cause disruption. You can make things melt, bend, change the molecules. You can cause them to move in air and water, all kinds of things. That's PK. So I figured, I know how to do this. I can do this. What I want to learn is, how do the Russians do it? So I was...
Why did you key in on them? Were they doing things that were different?
I didn't know. I had heard from a physicist friend of mine that they were doing very different things. In fact, he was supposed to go with me on the trip, and he, at the last minute, he couldn't go. But he had gone, you know, a decade earlier. And he had told me, you know, involved, it's just a whole different system. Fortunately, I had been talking to a friend of mine who's an aerospace engineer, and we were having lunch, and we're talking for a long time. And I happened to notice, because I was sort of playing with the spoon and the knife on the table as we're talking, and I realized after like an hour or so that I couldn't pull them apart. They were magnetized.
Jeez.
And I said to my friend, do you see that? And of course, she's a scientist. She's like very, well, you know, they use these, in these big restaurants, they have washing machines. You dump all the cutlery in, and they're magnetized, you know, to keep the cutlery separate. She said it's probably that. So I said, well, really? So I got up. I went to another table. I get another knife and another spoon. I test them. They're completely not magnetized. They won't stick. And I sit there. I didn't tell her I was doing this. And I sit there for a while, and I start just holding them. And they're magnetized again. A different set.
So this was you. You're doing these things.
I'm doing those things. So I said to her, I said, you know, would you be interested in going to Russia with me to learn how their method of PK?
Hold on right there. We'll get you into Russia when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie with you, along with Nancy Dutertre, as we're talking about her work in psychokinesis. One of her books is called How to Talk to an Alien, by the way. So let's get you to Russia. How do you get there, Nance?
I fly.
Aha! like a magical bird.
There you go. No, I got there. I arrived, I think it was August 1st of 2019. And I get there, and I meet my friends there, and we are there for a couple of days, and then we start our training. It was a 2-week training. Half of it was done at an institute in St. Petersburg, and then the second half of it was done at their, they had a, what they called a retreat, which was somewhere, I have really no clue where, somewhere in the countryside in Russia.
And who trained you? Was it a group of people or just one individual?
Well, that was the really weird thing. I had been negotiating for 2 years to set this thing up,
mm-hmm.
and had been pushing, trying to find out, well, who are going to be the instructors. The director said that she would be in and out, which she was in and out. She was sort of supervising, and we had two instructors, both women, who led us primarily only in exercises, physical exercises. So we started, we did for 2 weeks about 6 to 7 hours of physical exercises every day.
That's intense.
It's pretty intense. I mean, they weren't, you know, like aerobics or anything, but they were physical exercises. A lot of them were more similar, I would say, to some, like, very fast yoga-type movements. And then the director would come in and sort of debrief us on, you know, well, what did you feel? What happened? And, you know, stuff like that. They would tell us to focus on certain energetic things. Very similar in a lot of respects to Qigong, where you're working with things like energy balls and stuff like that. But there was an, it became increasingly obvious. It took us both a while to really get the full picture. And we both went there with, you know, open minds. We just wanted to learn how to do PK, and we didn't get a chance to do much PK at all, strangely.
That's weird. And I'm certain they charged you for the course, right?
I won't even get into that. They absolutely charged us the American price.
I get it.
But we didn't get a chance to do much PK at all.
Did you feel ripped off?
No, it was worse than that, because it ended up being basically like an absolutely bizarre boot camp, and it had a prison aspect. We were prisoners, in effect.
My gosh.
And we were not allowed ever to leave a room, any room, unless we were accompanied. Sometimes they would leave us for hours on end in a room. They wouldn't say when they were coming back.
Jeez.
We had to ask permission to go to the bathroom whenever, and we had to be accompanied. We were...
How bizarre.
Yeah, it was really bizarre. We underwent, as I began to understand, because it was very, very subtle. It was a form of a mind control that was being done to us to create kind of a mental instability. They isolate you. They do all the stuff that you normally do in a cult. And by the way, this was a cult, because the guy running this thing, who refused to come and even say hello to us except for once, which was in close to the end of the 2-week period of time, he's a former Soviet nuclear submarine commander. And apparently, and they all venerate him like a god.
Oh, those commanders are like stormtroopers.
Kinda, yeah. And somehow in my mind, I wasn't expecting that. I mean, I was expecting somebody like with wearing glasses, like an Edgar Cayce type.
With a personality.
With, yeah. I know this guy had personality, but he, when he finally met us, he didn't introduce himself, really. The director translated, because he refused to speak or said he didn't speak any English. And he launched into a 4-hour tirade against Americans and America.
How bizarre.
And was yelling at us. And he eventually told my friend he told her to shut up. He told her she was not to speak. And so everything got directed at me.
And you were there for 2 weeks. You probably felt, I got to get out of here.
Well, by the time we got to the retreat, it was a walled-in compound with automatic steel gates that closed.
Sounds like they were going to kidnap you if you were any good at PK.
Well,
uh-huh.
At the end of the, on our very last night, and I kept saying for a couple of days, you know, should I call a cab to get to the airport, and when should I leave, and can you call a cab? Anyway, we talked, you know, later, we talked later. And they didn't. And I was told I had to be at the airport by 5 a.m. on that last night.
Right. It's an international flight, of course.
Yeah. So they had not told us how we were leaving or if we were leaving. And we were...
Did you get scared?
Yeah. By the because we were interrogated for more than 4 hours. We were recorded. We were recorded everywhere. Our stuff was searched. We were not allowed to... There were no other people there. That was the other weird thing.
This doesn't sound like a training program.
I don't know what it was. At any rate...
How did you find it? How did you find it?
Through my physicist friend, who, when I told him about how we had been treated, he was horrified beyond belief. He said, that's not at all the experience that I had. Now, I don't know what the deal was.
And you believed him, right? I assume?
Yeah, I believe him.
Okay.
Anyway, we were interrogated, recorded, and we were told to evaluate the program, and then my friend was told to change her evaluation. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to leave our room in order to, you know. We were then recorded. I didn't think we were going to get out. And at 2 a.m. in the morning, the director finally called for a cab. And then she disappeared.
Jeez.
And by the way, we were told that we wouldn't know when we were allowed to eat. We ate, when we did eat, we ate the same meal virtually every single time.
My God. I bet you couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, I was terrified. So as of the first day, because I kept a journal, I began to notice my back hurt. And I didn't want to complain because I was there in Russia and I wanted to learn the Russian methods. I didn't want anything to interfere. I didn't want to take medications for sure.
Did you have a sore back prior to that?
No.
Never. Okay.
Never. Never, never. In fact, when I get any type of like a massage and they always want to work on my back, and I said, no, skip the back. I don't care about my back. My back is fine. Never had a problem with my back.
So you're there, and your back's beginning to tweak on you. It's beginning to hurt you.
Right. And by the third day, it was excruciating, but I didn't want to say anything. So I took one or two ibuprofen, but I told the director, I said, look, I hope this doesn't interfere with the PK process or whatever, but my back hurts, and I got to do this. By the eighth day, she finally pays attention to me. And she says, okay, Nancy, you stand up. So I stand up. She was a medical doctor and also a medical intuitive. She scans me visually, tells me to sit down. And, of course, I have to be bolt upright, sitting on the edge of the bench. And she says, okay, I give you exercise. So she tells me to imagine that I have white light from the base of my spine and to move it up through all the vertebrae and to shoot it out through the top of my head, release it. So I do that. And she says, okay, now... you're going to take black energy from around the top of your head, and you're going to pull it in through the top of your head and all the way down your spine to the base of your spine. And as soon as she told me to do that, I said to myself, something is really, really, really wrong here. You know, I'm a medical intuitive. I'm an energy healer.
Right.
I've dealt with these people, you know, in this field for a very long time, including other Russians, by the way. And I never, ever, ever have heard anybody say, get rid of all your white light and pull in black energy.
Right. That's like something demonic, for crying out loud.
Yeah. And I did it anyway. I said, well, you know, I'm in Russia, went in Russia, you know, do like the Russians do.
So you felt more pain when you did that, I bet.
All I know is it continued to get worse. And by the time I got back to the States, within 2 weeks, I had an emergency. I had to go as an emergency to see my physician because I could barely walk. I had excruciating nerve pain.
Oh, my God.
They sent me to an orthopedic surgeon immediately. I had three orthopedic surgeons, two orthopedic surgeons, one neurosurgeon say, all they had to do is look at the x-rays and the scans. They said, yep, we see why you're in so much pain. You have to have immediate surgery. Why? Because I had a the little bone that connects the vertebrae and the, was broken, and the disc was completely herniated and missing.
Was broken?
Yeah.
And you don't remember hurting that, do you?
No, I don't.
That's weird.
And I had horrible sciatic pain, and I was told, get immediate surgery. That's the only way to fix this. Oh, and by the way, they said, your back, because there's no bone holding it together or any disc holding the vertebrae together, it's slipping. So it's your back is 50% off, you know, disconnected.
It's like it's not connected to the spinal cord.
The spinal cord is in there. That's the part I never really understood. It's in there, but the bones in the spine are 50% not connected.
They're loose.
And
that's
eventually
weird.
They become 100% disconnected, which is pretty scary.
That is scary. From your neck down, Nancy, how far down was the injury?
It's very low down. It's L5-S1.
Okay, by the base of your spine, right around there?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I had all kinds of people praying for me, every religion you can think of, plus healers and remote viewers and, you know, it's just everybody. I did physical therapy for half a year. I saw a Muslim faith healer.
Did you have the surgery?
No, I don't. No. And by the way, that's the last thing I want to do.
Okay.
Because I've heard too many horror stories about back surgeries.
So you're trying to heal this thing.
Trying every which way I
every
know how
way
to heal
you
this
can.
Thing. Nothing works. It started to get worse. And I couldn't, you know, holding a cup of coffee was excruciatingly painful because it pulled my spine forward. I couldn't do grocery shopping. I could carry barely one bag, but that was painful. If I made my bed, I had to go lie down for a half hour.
My God. You couldn't probably even bend over, could you?
No, I couldn't bend over. It's hard to put on my socks.
Oh, my God.
So anyway, so that brings me up to February 19th.
The night of the dream.
So I have, let me call it in quotation marks, a dream, because I don't believe it was just a dream. And I find myself down in my kitchen. I'm looking out at my front yard. I'm, you know, washing dishes or something in the sink. And I'm with somebody, a friend.
This is in the quote-unquote dream,
in
right?
In the quote-unquote dream.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
And I see a red helicopter landing. And I say to my friend, don't they know they can't land a helicopter in my front yard? And it lands anyway. And a tall man gets out. He's got brown hair, kind of stocky, not that good looking, walks to my front door. So I go to the front door and I open it and I say, yes, can I help you? And he says, here, this is for you. And he hands me a package. It's wrapped in brown paper. I don't know what it is. It's about an inch thick. It's about 5 inches by 4 inches. And it's unbelievably heavy. And the thing that stuck in my head was it's heavy like lead, like a slab of lead. And I say, what's this? And he says, you're going to need this. And I'm thinking, what do I need? I don't need anything.
You don't even know what it is, right?
I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
I'm not a person who, I just don't need stuff. I really don't. And I said, and then I looked at it, I said, oh, you're not from here, are you? And as soon as I said that, his entire body began to get a sort of a bluish hue to it, and it began to glitch like a hologram until finally his physical body disappeared. And what was left was something absolutely indescribable, but it was a being, some type of a being. I've never seen a being like this, not in the movies, not in my brain, not anywhere. It was sort of like a cluster of orbs, blue orbs emitting light with some long things that I just can't describe.
You mean the being looked like a number of orbs put together?
the part that was floating in the center, yes.
Huh.
It was almost like, if you could almost imagine like a cluster of grapes.
Okay.
It was just weird.
Okay,
and then
I get
my dream
that.
Ends. And I'm thinking, damn, I never found out what was in the package.
What a dream.
So I call up a very good friend of mine. She's very psychic. She's had her own contact experiences. And I explained the dream. And I said, what do you think that was? And she says, I don't know. I said, what do you think it was? I said, the only thing I know is it was heavy like lead.
Hold it right there, Nance. We're going to come right back. We'll pick up the story right there. And I'm dying to find out about the back once we get into this and who this visitation might have been. Then we'll take calls as well on Coast to Coast AM about PK.